Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to the executive producer of NBC's hit music series, The Voice, Audrey Morrissey. I recently traveled to Hollywood, California for an NBC press junket where I talked to her about the new season, some of the show's newest features, and its newest coach, Kelly Clarkson. Former Essence editor and fashion expert, Constance C.R. White, is in the studio to discuss her new coffee table book, How to Slay, inspiration from the queens and kings of black style. And closing out the show is another NBC exclusive with three of the writers from This Is Us. Kay O'Yagan, Shakree Tillman, and Elizabeth Berger discuss the success of the show, what to expect in season 3, and much more. But first, here is this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Extras Casting Atlanta is looking for Hispanic men and women between the ages of 20 to 50 to portray police officers for an upcoming pilot. The male actors must also have clean-cut looks. If this is you, please submit a recent photo, size, and contact information to pilotextras2018@gmail.com with police in the subject line of the email. Extras Casting Atlanta is also looking for men and women in their 40s to 60s to portray various city officials and community leaders for an upcoming project. If this is you, please submit your photo in business attire to pilotextras2018@gmail.com with City Council in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, Stars announced this week that its successful drama Power has been renewed for a 6th season in advance of production, wrapping up on season 5. Executive producer and star of the show, Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, is scheduled to direct the season 6 premiere episode. Power is a visionary drama from creator Courtney A. Kemp that straddles the glamorous Manhattan lifestyles of the rich and infamous and the underworld of the international drug trade. The cast is led by NAACP Image Award winner Omari Hardwick, along with Joseph Sikora, Naturi Naughton, Lila Loren, Lorenz Tate, and Brandon Victor Dixon. The 5th season of Power returns on Sunday, July 1st at 9 p.m. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Hey, Upfront listeners, this is Ray Cornelius urging you to make your pledge of support for this show and the countless others that you listen to throughout the week at WCLK.com. Remember, your contribution keeps programs like this on the air. Membership matters at Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Spivey Hall, a proud supporter of WCLK programming, presents the Terrell Stafford Quintet on Saturday, March 17th at 7:30 p.m. Joining Terrell on stage is Tim Warfield on saxophone, Bruce Barth on piano, Peter Washington on bass, Billy Williams on drums. Spivey Hall is located on the campus of Clayton State University in Morrow. Information available at spiveyhall.org.
This is Lisa Arendell, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
Walking towards the airport, leaving a show in your past. I traveled 1,500 miles to see you. Oh, I begged you to warn me that you didn't want to.
That was a clip of singer Stephanie Skipper performing Kelly Clarkson's hit record, Piece by Piece, during this week's blind auditions on NBC's The Voice. The popular music competition series is back for another season, and Clarkson is sitting in the coach's chair, along with Adam Levine, Alicia Keys, and Blake Shelton. I recently traveled to the NBC studios in Hollywood, California, where I interviewed the show's executive producer, Audrey Morrissey. Here's what she says about adding Clarkson to its roster of famous coaches.
Kelly brings Kelly. I mean, she is a force of nature. She is completely unfiltered. She is what you see. I think her sort of joy and energy is infectious. I also like how she just sort of wears her emotions on her face. So you know exactly what she's thinking. She's quick-witted. She jumps up and down. She's really grounded and hilarious, so that's what she brings. You know, I think I don't think we've really had a personality quite like Kelly on the show before. So she really keeps Blake on his toes because he can't really have the country thing all to himself. She's right there with him. She kind of married into country royalty, you know, tentacles and everything. She's had hits herself in country music. I mean, she's legit from there. She lives there. And yet she's also pop. I mean, she's lots of things. She's soul. I mean, there's nothing she can't sing. She's can fit into many different situations and genres. So, and she's world class. So she can give Alicia and Adam, everybody, a run for their money. So that's great.
One of the newest features on the show this season is The Block. It's a button on each coach's chair that allows him or her to block another one from taking a prospective singer. Morse compares the new feature to a defensive move often seen in sports competitions.
We have The Block. That was sort of like a big change. We'd never really had a big, you know, we really liken the show to sports because we have coaches and we have artists that, you know, in teams and all this kind of thing, and we have steals and we have battles, so we've always looked to sports as a muse and a filter through which we run ideas. And we realized, wow, we've never really had this kind of defensive move, or I guess I've said like an offensive defensive thing, because it's very, you know, offensive to go and block somebody, but it's really kind of a defensive move. So we decided to explore that, and we came up with The Block, which we really like. We ran it by the coaches first. We said, we're thinking about doing this, and what do you think? And they loved it. They were like, oh, wow, a block. I can't wait to use my block. Finally, a block. Where has it been all my life? So, yeah, so we've added it. It's been really, really interesting to see how it's played out, and it definitely added a new dynamic, which is what we wanted to do.
Morse also talked about updating the coach's chair and instituting a save.
In the spirit of trying to keep the show fresh and never have it look dated, you know, we just kept looking at that chair, like, time to change the chair, please. We had done a few little updates and tweaks, little refreshed, but never like a big design. So we were really thoughtful about it, because you don't want to, we started talking about almost like when car manufacturers like redesign a classic model, like how do they update it and not have it be so far afield that people don't like it or whatever. So I think we did a great job. It's a little more futuristic. It has lines and similar lines to some sort of classic chairs, like design-wise, classic chairs. I think it works. And then, of course, it has three new buttons for The Block. So that was fun to do, too.
Now, you guys also have a save this time around, right?
We do have a save. That will be coming up in the knockouts. And that was also something, again, we really try to be very self-examining. After every season, you know, how did it go this season? What can we do better? What would make sense? What naturally is the next evolution in the show? And, you know, what would invariably happen is coaches would be crushed because they couldn't keep some of their best people. I mean, just through the mechanics of the game, they had to give somebody up. And so they would say, like, God, can't we have a save or something? Like, why can't I just say, it's too, I can't call it. I want you both. Like, why can't we do that, Audrey? And so we finally said, well, let's try it. So, but we did want the other coaches to be able to have a crack at that person. So we didn't want to make it that coaches in their mind would put their two best together in their own mind thinking, oh, I'm going to keep them both. It was like, okay, fine, you can try that, but you're going to be forced to pick one, and then the other coaches will have a chance to steal. And your artist might elect to stay with you, but at least it gives a strong argument to the other coaches to say, he just gave you up, or she just gave you up. Why are you going with them? I would have never chosen you know, I would have kept you, like, come to me. So it's interesting. We've already shot those, so I know what happens, and it's full of surprises.
When discussing the magic of the voice, Morrissey believes it all comes down to each artist's noble pursuit of music and following their passion that really connects with audiences.
I really believe music is such a noble pursuit. I really do. I think it's high art. I think it's accessible to people. It moves people. It makes a difference. It changes mindsets. So to be able to help people make a living that are talented, that want to make a living at music, that's incredible. Like, that's what I personally get out of the show. And the amount of people that now make a living doing music because of the show is incredible. It's incredible. You know, not everybody can be a superstar, but to really have music be a large part of your life, to make a living at it, or just get a little further down your personal path of music, that's what the show does. And I just think that's the honesty of what really happens at the show. And everybody here loves what they do. And I just believe that realness and that kindness somehow carries through to the screen, and somehow viewers connect to that. They sense that.
Morrissey also revealed that she is working on a new NBC competition series titled Songland. Go to WCLK.com to read more about that and more. The Voice airs on Mondays and Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on NBC. Hey, Upfront listeners, don't forget to tune in to my Upfront special from SCAD's A TV Fest. It airs this coming Tuesday, March 20th at 8 p.m. on Comcast 23 and features interviews with the cast of CW's Black Lightning, Showtime's The Chi, and NBC's Rise. That's an Upfront special on CAU TV 23 this Tuesday, March 20th at 8 p.m. Go to WCLK.com for more details.
Hi, this is Karen White, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
That was the one and only Diana Ross performing her classic hit record, I'm Coming Out. Miss Ross is just one of the many famous faces featured in Constance C.R. White's new coffee table book, How to Slay, inspiration from the queens and kings of black style. The former Essence editor and style maven has put together a collection of 150 images of African-American fashion over the last 35 years. Check out a portion of my conversation with her and learn how to slay. Well, hello there, Constance C.R. White. How are you?
I am so great because I'm here with you.
Yeah, I'm so excited having
amazing.
You here in the
Thank
studio.
You.
Yeah, it's been a while
Thank
since
you.
We've seen each other.
It has, yeah. And now it's in Atlanta again. I'm back, and I'm so excited to be back on the occasion of my book coming out, How to Slay.
That's right. And I dressed, you know, I try to slay as best as I could
you
today.
You are slaying for days. I love it. You're joining the Club of the Slayers.
Yeah.
I love what you're wearing, this black.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so appropriate, too, to the underpinnings, because that garment that you're wearing definitely has underpinnings in the soft tunicness of African style.
Yeah.
So,
I call it my Kanye West.
Oh, okay. All right. I have a Kanye West back cover too. I have something for Kanye right here.
Yeah. So let's get into this book, How to Slay. We're talking about her new coffee table book, inspiration from Queens and Kings of Black Style. How did this book come about? What was the inspiration behind this?
Well, I thought that there was a real need to show the impact of black culture, African-American culture on fashion, broadly speaking. So it really came from the impact that was happening. And I've been covering fashion as a journalist for many, many years. And I can see I've covered fashion in Atlanta, in New York, in Milan, in Paris, London. I've been to Morocco. I've been to Côte d'Ivoire. And, you know, the point is that everywhere I'd go to see the top designers at work, I saw inspiration from the Black community in those fashions. So that was one of the major drivers and motivations for doing the book, that I saw it happening and I wanted to document it. I think it's important to document our contributions.
And this is almost like a history book, because in going back and looking through it, you've got so many people in there. I mean, from Josephine Baker, you go all the way back to some of the African tribes and just some of their influence in African-American
style.
You're also talking about the original divas like Josephine Baker. You've got Dr. Maya Angelou is in there. Of course, my favorite diva, Diana Ross.
Who's
is
that?
In there.
Diana Ross.
And then you've got some of the newer girls.
And there are a lot of the contemporary ones as well, along with the ones you named. We have Rihanna, Beyonce, Janelle Monáe, who's, you know, really recent and an incredible style purveyor. And I thought it was important to juxtapose. I'm glad you mentioned the ancient African history. We touch on that, a style, and how even that is such a huge influence today. One of the juxtapositions in the book that's really exciting and interesting is you see this picture of Nicki Minaj, and she's wearing leopard print.
Right.
And then on the facing page, you see, hey, I got your leopard print for you and from whence it comes. Right. We see these beautiful people with their wives, these tribal chiefs doing a dance in their African, like real leopard skin clothing.
Yeah.
So we see how, you know, when you see leopard skin done brilliantly by Yves Saint Laurent, you know, you really want to think about where's that really coming from? And we don't often hear and realize that are not conscious and woke to the fact that it's coming from African peoples.
Yeah.
You know, the Black community.
Now, let's talk about, because you've also have some amazing pictures in there of our church mothers, the first ladies, the deaconettes, women of the cloth, the big
hats.
Thanks
for bringing that up. Matching hats, beautiful hat, matching the suit in the pastel Easter colors, but which are relevant year round. Right. That was some of the most fun I had with the book, like going through some of those photos, which just beautiful, the way these women put themselves together. Not all of them made them into the book, but the ones that are in there, people are just going to look at that and just love it. You know, like it's hard to even put into words. It's a feeling when I think How to Slay the book is a feeling when you lose yourself. I want people to lose themselves in the photography and the text. And it's just so rich. And that's an example. There's even a nice photo, too, of Aretha, Queen of Soul, in her hat. And you know she loves her hats.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Because I think, what was that, when she performed at the inauguration?
President Obama.
Yeah, yes. The hat was as legendary as the performance.
Oh, my goodness.
It was like
everyone was
trying to find that hat.
Yeah. I think she's probably sold, I can't figure out how many hats she may have sold just with her, almost threatening to upstage the first lady with her hat.
Now, what do you want readers to walk away with from How to Slay?
I'd love for readers, there are two audiences, major audiences. I think everyone will take something from How to Slay, but for me, the two major audiences are African-American people, Black people, and I want them to take away the richness of the beauty and heritage that's on display in How to Slay. As I said earlier, there's something about when people see it, when Black people see How to Slay and they just pick it up and look at it, and you know, it's early yet, the book just came out a few weeks ago, they just kind of like start erupting and emoting, or they go really, really quiet. And I love that. I love both of them. They're just like losing themselves in the pages. And I want it to be on everyone's coffee table. That's where I see this book. And the second group I see are creatives, or whether you're a graphic designer, you're a photographer, you're a hairstylist, you're a designer. I think that this book is something that can be both educational and inspirational of any race, because it's something that all professionals in that space should have.
Thank you, Constance C.R. White, for teaching us how to slay. Go to WCLK.com to hear the entire conversation, where we'll also chat about cultural appropriation and more.
Support for WCLK programming comes from RLK Events, presenting Sisters in Song on Sunday, March 18th at 5 p.m. at the Ray Charles Performing Arts Center at Morehouse College. Kathleen Bertrand, Julie Dexter, Dion Ferris, and more will be celebrating Women's History Month by performing tributes to their favorite jazz divas. Ticket information is available at Sisters in Song at Eventbrite.com.
Hey, yo, peace world, it's the Love King Raheem Devon, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
Mom, I know that our stuff It can be complicated sometimes. But it's because all that I've ever wanted was to be like you. I want to be a singer like you. I want to be a mom like you. I want to have a marriage like yours. Mom, you are not. You are not in my way. You are my way. Sweetheart. No, no crying. No crying. We have to get to the wedding first before you cry.
I know, but...
That was a clip from this week's season finale of NBC's award-winning drama, This Is Us. The Pearson family's generational story unfolds as revelations from parents Jack and Rebecca come to light while their triplets, Kate, Randall, and Kevin, discover deeper meaning in their present-day lives. I got a chance to interview show writers Kay O'Yagan, Shakri Tillman, and Elizabeth Berger. Here's what they all say about the inspiration behind the series and drawing from their own personal experiences.
Our writer's room, in order to be part of it, you have to be sort of willing to bare your soul. We always talk about sort of when we first all came together, those first few weeks of the job, season one, it felt to all of us like group therapy, honestly. Like, we all got together and everybody just told sort of their deepest, darkest secrets, kind of, and sort of all of the most emotional stuff they'd ever gone through, and it kind of set the tone then for the whole first season, and also sort of like what our writer's room would be like, which in order for the show to work, it just had to be a place of, you know, sharing what you've been through.
Yeah, I think, and to that point, and I think what it also did for those first 2 weeks was kind of set the tone and also allow us to know that we could be safe and comfortable, and as things happen through our lives, we could always sort of like divulge and share and be ourselves. And that was something that was very, very helpful. And Shakri, you said something about coming in to the space and like,
Yeah, because I came in season two, and so it was two things you noticed really immediately coming into This Is Us writer's room. Number one, that people wear their emotions on their sleeve, so there's going to be some crying like in the room. Mm-hmm. That happens for real, so it's not just that you're crying at home, it's also some people are sharing those emotions around the table like this. And I think the other thing you notice is that it's personal. So people are, to your point, where it comes from people's own personal mm-hmm. stories and their own personal background. Things that they share that might just be like a little nugget of something will end up on the screen, you know. So that's always been really interesting.
The use of flashback plays a major role in telling the history of the characters, and Shariq Tillman thinks that's a huge part of the show's mystique.
Before I came to the show, I was always a fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought it was an interesting way, not to get too intellectual, but I thought it was an interesting way to sort of experience life, right? Mm-hmm. Because we talk a lot in the writer's room about the past informing the present. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like how we all live. We have our own past, and we can pin back to moments that were transformative for us, mm-hmm. or that were meaningful or hurtful or traumatic or whatever. And they mean something to us like right now, even if mm-hmm. it's 20 years ago or 30 years ago, what? And this show does a very good job of presenting that in 43 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the magic of the show. So I think with a thought to making sure that we're always opening up our characters a little bit more, a half a turn, a little bit more every time we go to the past, and using it as a, not just a device, but as something that tells us more about character. I think that's something we try to be really cognizant of and try to do.
Kay O'Yagan also talked about the importance of viewers and the need to allow each story to unfold.
This is one area that we talk about a lot. A lot of people just want everything right now. Mm-hmm. They wanted Jack's death the minute you saw him.
Yeah,
and
how did that?
The thing that's always so funny, because for us, we're very lucky. We always talk about, in season one, we had already broken and written 9 episodes before we premiered. So we didn't really have the opportunity to sort of like get feedback from the audience until we were so far into our season. So literally every single question, every single concern that everybody has, it's an unfolding. You know what I mean? We're going to get to it. It would have been so gratuitous to just be like, oh, dad died XYZ, without actually going on that journey during that time period. So it's like we understand people's frustrations with certain things, but for us, we're always like, guys, it's okay, because we know we're going to get there. So so that is the long way of saying absolutely. That is sort of like, this woman is 60-something years years old, married to this man. Of course we have to get there, you know what I mean? Like, and get there in a way that informs where our children are, where our adults are, what their past, you know, experiences were, and how we got to this place. So we will absolutely get there. We were lucky enough to get picked up for two additional seasons, so we broke the story. In season one, we haven't heard about four yet. Oh, right. Praise God. But we were lucky enough, so we broke story with that in mind. So we're very patient.
The character Deja was introduced during this past season and was portrayed by newcomer Lyric Ross. Here's what K.O. Yagan and Elizabeth Berger said about the relevance of her role and why she was a perfect fit for the show.
Deja was first introduced as a story point for Randall at the end of season one, or at least the idea of adoption and fostering. And we took him on this journey. But it was she was introduced in 203, which Elizabeth wrote in 203. And it was just sort of like, when we met her, we just fell in love with her. And she was there, like Elizabeth was there, can talk about the casting process of Lyric, but it's just like, it's that girl. It's just her.
Lyric was fascinating because it was an open casting call to all over the country. And we got all of these amazing kids self-taped, like hundreds of submissions, and then it was whittled, and we were like, who is this girl? And she'd never been, I think she'd maybe been in one thing. And we were so excited to find her. But then moving forward, like, we had so many conversations because we didn't want to villainize Shauna, because we felt like these two had this incredible bond, you know, and we really wanted to honor that bond. And a lot of time was spent on, like, how do we tell this story where there's no bad guy here, and all you're rooting for is Deja to be okay, but we understand where Shauna's coming from, we understand the love between them, but we also know how, you know, how wonderful and safe she would feel staying with Randall and Beth. So that was sort of a long conversation of what's the best way to execute it, and that is sort of what brought us to doing a full Deja episode, because we figured, like, let's show this girl's whole life, let's show everything she's gone through, so that by the end, it's so beautifully done by Kay when she gives that speech and she gets to, I'm really tired, like, you feel that with her, you know, and you kind of really understand also the choice that Shauna's making, and that it's for her daughter, that it's actually a choice out of love. Which is, again, you can only do that with a brilliant script.
This Is Us has already been renewed for a third season, and the writers give us a sneak peek of what to expect.
So when we come back in season three, we're going to be dealing with the time period sort of right after Jack died. So you're definitely going to be seeing sort of the beginning of sort of how Miguel started interacting with the family. Obviously, we've already shown this season that they didn't end up getting together romantically until 2008.
Right.
But we're going to still see sort of the way, sort of what happened there in that immediate period.
Thank you, K.O. Yagan, Elizabeth Berger, and Shakri Tillman for that exclusive interview and for another amazing season of This Is Us. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I would really like to thank all of my special guests, Audrey Morrissey of The Voice, Constance C.R. White of How to Slay, and the writers of This Is Us, K.O. Yagan, Sharik Tillman, and Elizabeth Berger. I would also like to thank my upfront engineers, Glenn Simmons and Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, March 24th, for another exciting edition of Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront. Inside Atlanta's entertainment industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.